people have a need and a want to educate themselves around growing food and stewarding land. They just don't know how to get there. And, you know, a community garden like this, it's so easy to be a member because you don't have to know anything. You know, you don't have to be a master gardener.
Next on Peak Environment.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
Welcome to another episode of Peak Environment, a Studio 809 community podcast in the Pikes Peak region about environmental integrity and stewardship. Peak Environment is recorded at the Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. Hey everyone, I'm your host, Allie Richardson. I'm with Pikes Peak Permaculture, a nonprofit dedicating to teaching and promoting sustainable practices right here in Southern Colorado. If you're not familiar with permaculture design, it's all about working with nature instead of against it, building stronger connections with the earth and all of its inhabitants, regenerating land and water systems, growing food, and making sure our regions thrive for generations to come. You can check out more about what we do at pikespeakpermaculture.org. Today, I have the pleasure of being out of the studio on location at Vermijo Community Gardens. And today's guest here is Christy Taylor.
Hi.
Hi. Christy, when I first heard about what you were doing here at Vermijo Community Gardens, I was excited. Yeah, we have hoogles, Christy said. Mm-hmm. Come visit the gardens. And I did, early in the season this year, with the promise to come back to record this July, surrounded by the abundance the landscape offers, again, here in the heart of the city. So, Christy, welcome to the show, and thank you for inviting me out again.
Yes, oh my gosh, thanks for having me. It makes me just as excited to have you here as you are to be here. I am Christy Taylor, Colorado resident. I was born and raised here, and I left for a little while. When I came back in 2019, I really had this calling back to the land where I'm from. And, you know, riding my bike to Manitou during 2020, back and forth on the Midland Trail right here, I passed this garden and it was locked up and abandoned. And so it really sparked my interest at the same time that shelves were empty in the grocery stores. And so I contacted the city and here we are, three seasons, I feel like three and a half seasons in, and we're starting to reshape the land into a food forest. Which the goal with the community is to have a community-based place that feeds people with, I don't know, the least human interaction possible, where we're really here to observe not just the land but ourselves and to really reconnect back to nature in that remembrance that we are part of nature.
That's right. The real definition of stewards of the land.
Yes.
Thank you for that introduction.
Yeah, thank you.
And so it sounds like your background kind of inspired you to want to take on this project. Did you have gardening experience coming into this?
I didn't. Absolutely none. I lived on the east side of the country for about 15 years, which is abundant with water and really great soil, and I never grew a thing. So, yeah, interesting enough, I was called back to a very drought-ridden, desert, elevated land to try and grow food.
And I'm looking around for everybody listening right now. We're standing in the middle of the garden, and when I was arriving to see Christy, I could barely see her. She was hidden behind all the vegetation. So, really, you have a beautiful, budding food forest here. What are you most proud of that you've done here in this garden?
Really, I think more so than attempting to grow food at high elevation, I think as a community, we're most proud of, you know, continuing to add native plants,
plants that will continue to have this relationship of reciprocity between human and plant. So we just really try to continue to add that year after year. That's what we've done. We've really been in a lot of observation rather than just coming in to plant things that really don't exist in this climate.
Right. Or just monoculture. As I'm looking around, there's a lot of different varieties.
Right.
In different levels throughout the garden as well.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around. It seems like you have somewhat of plots, but is that how this garden here works?
So we're trying to get away from that idea of a community garden being raised plots where everybody is an individual owner and does their individual thing. I think that the individualism of community is where we need to get away from. And so we were blessed to come into a place that was stewarded by people who really knew what they were doing with gardening and with permaculture too. And so we came into 21 in-ground beds and 3 fruit trees and probably 11 perennials, which instead of, you know, coming in and just digging up or bringing in soil or selling individual plots, we decided for that first year to just observe and see what we have, because we knew we were coming into something that people had left but really had this vision and knew what they were doing, and we wanted to honor that. And so after the first year of observation, we started to add on more perennials. So we added about 11 more that first season, including another fruit tree, which is an apricot tree. And then we started to disrupt the ground a little. So when we're thinking in terms of how nature grows, or how we can most efficiently produce food for a community, we decided to take out some of the rows and turn them into keyholes, which I believe is like an English garden term, where there's more grow space. So in doing 2 keyholes in the back here, we eliminated 4 or 5 walkways and turned that into grow space. So in turn, have more grow space, less walkways, and less of that rows where, you know, is more of a monoculture term or way to grow. Bringing more permaculture into it, you know, like a 5x5 space with 5 to 10 species in the keyholes, we're able to do more of that.
Christy here has joined the 2025 Permaculture Design Certification course, which is why I think now too you might be applying some of the permaculture techniques that you've learned and some of the principles.
Right. And so one of our members is awesome. Hopefully he'll be taking the course, the PDC, next season. But I'm so excited about being part of Pikes Peak Permaculture Design course this year, just because it has really brought me back to this remembrance of this innate wisdom that I had. You know, we were observing before we even knew that that was a permaculture concept, which it was so nice to know that. But here, I'll walk you over and you can see some of the berms. So one of our members does a lot of the berms over at Flying Pig and came over to do some here. So this one that you're looking out in front of us that is housing all of these currants and some really delicate herbs very well, this is a 3-year-old berm. And then we decided that, so that was one of the things that we did the first year, was dug out this berm. About 3.5-4 feet down, you hit about 2 inches of road base. I believe that this was a parking lot for RVs when you used to be able to camp along the river.
Oh, wow.
Or along the creek. Yeah. So we were like, okay, well, let's berm this entire north side out so we can start to create some water tension, some structure within the garden, and get away from, you know, these rows. And so where it extends at this current right here, this is an alpine current, all the way down is the berm that we created last year. So this is 1 full year old. It housed 34 pumpkins last year. Wow. And so it's been fun to have these different ages too, so that we can do more observation, right? Like we found that not a whole lot of things that you want to keep for longevity, a lot of our perennials didn't weather well in a first year berm, but annual crops did, especially squash. So we've kind of gone with that, but now you'll see our berm is aging, so now it's able to house
perennial systems.
Yeah.
And the breakdown too with these hoogles, because they're filled with wood, mm-hmm. we don't get as much water. I see you have, you are actually putting water into the system, which is good, because hoogles out here would take that to be able to break down well.
Absolutely. And so we just added another one this year. We can go over just so I can show you, because we're getting smarter, right? We decided to put a water tube in our newest berm so that we could really soak it in there well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it'll be fun to see if that changes the dynamic of what we can plant that first, second to third year.
Yeah, I like how you just explained that too. It's like, we need to understand, like, when we're baking, we're using chemistry and it's science. The same thing happens in the garden. It's basically experiments. So
Yeah. If
you're gardening right now and you're just getting, like, really overwhelmed, just know that everybody's there and you will learn, and it will get better. One of the principles in permaculture is use slow and small solutions. And that is the truth, because if you came in here and just did everything at once, it would not be where it is today.
Right. And we've been more intent, being slow and being able to observe and not really come in to just pushing our will around. Somebody asked me recently, so what has nature taught you? And I was like, oh, that's easy, to leave my will at the door, to leave my expectations at the gate. You know, like, yes, I may have a laundry list of things to do, you know, starting with pulling weeds. But if I just give it a minute and I come in here and I take a look around and I see what's happening with the vegetation, what's happening with the insects, what's happening with the wildlife, my direction is then changed from what I think I should be doing. And so to really be able to have that openness while you're here, and allow kind of nature just to lead the way has yielded the best results. Let's put it that way. Yeah, it has. It's yielded the best results. So we've gotten better. Like, you know, grasshoppers is no secret. Everybody is struggling with them, right? And we're really big on no-till. We're really big on no herbicides, no pesticides. We're really specific about the type of seeds we plant here and what we bring in. You know, you can't always be, but bringing that intention at some level into a community space really helps people to be more intentional, even with their home gardens or at the grocery store, you know, or at the dinner table with their kids. So that's been a big piece.
It's a great model to have.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And for people to come in and see that, like you said, and take it back home.
Yeah.
It's going to be really important.
Yeah. And so we've just, you know, there's no real borders. There's no real rules. You know, everything's a suggestion, but we try to come together as a community to talk about, well, what's the best, not for us, but for this space and this land. And that's what we always come back to, no matter what it is that we're facing, whether it's an issue with the community, with the weather, or just some things that we're trying to accomplish within the garden.
Right. And there's going to be challenges.
Oh my gosh.
There's going to be challenges. Like, just the other day there was hail, but it does seem like this garden fared quite well.
Thanks.
Quite well.
And I owe that to diversity. And the same with the bugs, right? I owe it to diversity.
And you said that last time I was here, you noticed a lot more birds coming into this space now.
Oh yeah. So, you know, one of our solutions to the grasshopper problem is better, more attention to the soil, bringing in more bird baths, you know, and then bringing the birds down to ground level. And that's really helped. And of course, continuing to plant those 10 species within a 5x5 or 10x10 space
And being okay with a sacrificial crop.
Right. You're going to lose some,
and that's right. Okay. And being able to be okay with that so that they can stay there and not completely demolish this bed.
Yes, and building your soil, not bringing in the soil, just building it is important. That's going to help prevent diseased plants too, which, yeah, they do usually do go after grasshoppers. They go after the damaged crops. So how many community members do you have right now gardening in this area?
Probably about 27 this year, which is a little lower than last year. However, there's more concentrated intention this year. We have a couple of herbalists that bought two beds. We have some local neighborhood community members. USAA is a big contributor here. Some of their nonprofit or their specific groups come out and help once a month, and they have two beds. But for the most part, and we have a couple of other members that prefer their own beds, but are also active at with the CSA part.
For those who don't know what that means, that CSA stands for Community Supportive Agriculture.
Yep.
So again, people working together, not individually.
Right. And so, you know, we just run it like if you want to. We do have individual plots for sale each season. Right now, they're $90. We don't have any available. We have some smaller plots for $50, but it's a little late in the season, but it's a great time for winter crops, you know, to start thinking about fall and winter. But generally, it's a $45 membership fee for the season, and that gets you a job. That's usually weekly within the garden. We do have a Thursday weekly meetup in the evening where we all just kind of come together, maybe bring some food. We have a monthly potluck where we distribute our crop share.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot involved. And if someone lived by or, you know, wasn't too far, again, you had mentioned the Midland Trail is here, so they could ride their bike through
right
here.
Yep.
And, you know, there's beautiful trees around here, very nice mature trees because we are very close to Fountain Creek.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, really wonderful little area if you're nearby and want a community garden. I know looking up at the city's website, you're listed as one of the community gardens here.
Yes.
And it's actually just eight currently here in Colorado Springs. And when I first got into permaculture, it was through Pikes Peak Urban Gardens. I was volunteering, and then sadly years later I contacted them, found out it was dismantled, and that really hurt me because I was really hoping that we could get more communities learning how to do this. And so I was, you know, told to seek permaculture. That was the way to go. And now on my side of town, on the east side, off of Mark Shuffle and Barnes area, I'm actually trying to create a community garden as well. So we will be talking more about that.
That's exciting.
But we need to expand the opportunities, especially too on the south side of the town. I think that's kind of really where our food desert lies.
Yep.
If someone were wanting to come here and start a plot, how would they contact you, Christy?
So we have an email, vermahocommunitygarden@gmail.com. And then we are also on social media on Instagram and Facebook, Vermaho Garden COS. And that's at both. And yeah, we send out a monthly newsletter or email update for all members or just people interested in being here and being part of what we do. We have a couple of different things coming up this season. Our USAA meetups are every last Saturday of the month from 8 to 12. And then we just hooked up with A Mother's Guide to Survive. And so if you check out their Facebook page, they also have some events coming up on Saturdays, just with different topics. I think coming up Saturday is pest maintenance, you know,
okay.
Perfect time for
right.
it. Just natural remedies for pest maintenance in the garden. And yeah, there are some, we're just looking to
yeah, bring in more people, get people more excited. I think that people have a need and a want to educate themselves around growing food and stewarding land. They just don't know how to get there. And, you know, a community garden like this, it's so easy to be a member because you don't have to know anything. You know, you don't have to be a master gardener and show off your skills. You can come with no skills and maybe take home some
really amazing food.
Yeah, really amazing food or some cool ideas for your own spot.
Right. And friends.
Yeah, and friends. Yeah, the networking is so great. It's so vast. We all do such different things, but come together in such this loving collective space in agreement of what and how this should be handled.
You said it earlier, reciprocity, right? That's your growing season motto.
Yes, absolutely.
And children, bring them to the garden.
Yes.
You know, it was kind of an aha moment for me when I first heard that the word kindergarten is German. It's a word that stands for children in the garden.
Yes.
Children have always needed to be in the garden. That's where they thrive. The bully in the classroom becomes a leader outside. You know, it's just amazing how much patience you can see children have. You know, they'll pick up a ladybug and they'll just watch it, you know, just watch it and be amazed by how amazing life is and the patterns. That's a permaculture principle.
Yes.
Patterns in the environment, whether it's seed or the patterns on insects or the patterns that the leaves make or the patterns that the fruit have on them. It's just really treasure hunt.
I love that you bring that up. We do have a little bit of a treasure hunt in the garden. We have a wood maker who's one of our members, and he made us these really cool signs. And so we're getting ready to make a, you know, treasure hunt mark-off sheet. And so people can go and figure out what plants are what, so we can start identifying these as normal plants, because it's so nice to be able to identify everything in the garden. I'm certainly not there yet, but I'm learning.
Right. You got your little app. You're like,
What are you today? Well, it's I'm against the apps. Everybody's like, do you have your app out? And I'm like, no. Because it causes me not to know.
Like,
I want to name you. Well, and you bring something really interesting up too, like kids in the garden, right? People in the garden. I feel like adults in the garden helps to bring back our like childish nature, right? So there's a few things that have come along with this garden, and food injustice is a big piece. And it's not something that I thought was gonna come with the garden, but here in Old Colorado City, we have a pretty large homeless community. And so quite often, you know, we get quite a few passerbyers or quite a few people who really reside in this area along the river, which is natural, right? And so instead of, you know, like shunning them away, we've really come to appreciate all walks of life and all of the experience that people hold. I've seen so many people just come through and excited to just kind of walk through the garden and then offer a hand for an hour, and their experience of farming as a child. Like, that's so common. It's also taught us a lot of things, like being exposed in a space like this. You know, we can't really leave all of our things around because they get taken. And that's just part of this. Like, that's part of running a CSA on a community level, like on a public space community level. Everybody can garden in the privacy and safety of their backyards, right? This isn't that. I almost feel compelled to make it work in public spaces where people are afraid of what could happen, or they're afraid of the person who doesn't have a house that's, you know, down by the creek without knowing their story. You know, like all of this untalked about fear in here, it really gets diminished and we're able to like come together as one. A lot of, we were given a lot of gifts in the beginning of the garden, and, you know, because of the nature of stewarding publicly owned land, a lot of those things have disappeared. Well, I have a story for you. So we'll come back here. Last year, I took a month-long trip to go sit with one of my yoga teachers in meditation, you know, extending our breathwork practice, and it was in Virginia, and he gracefully showed me several food forest areas that are happening there. And the really cool thing about what's happening there is there are these huge food forests in these public spaces with no fences, with no gates, where things stay locked and things aren't taken. There is this reciprocity of the land. There is this energy that feeds that, so that people aren't taking beyond their needs. And people are interested in giving to a food forest that continually feeds them. And it was really cool. Well, when I got back, there was this porcelain monkey that had gotten thrown over the fence at Vermejo here. And so I think I came here immediately after landing, and it was something that, you know, I caught my attention. And it's a monkey with, it's a nurse, porcelain nurse monkey holding a bedpan. And we didn't really know what it was, but I set it up kind of as an ornament of the garden. Well, one of our garden members enlightened me about what that porcelain monkey resembled. And she asked me one day and she said, "Christy, do you know what that is?" And I was like, "No, Crystal, tell me. Please enlighten me because we don't know." And she said, "Well, that was a symbol during days of slavery for the slaves to know that they could come to this hospital and get care." And so it was this non, you know, like this real hush way of people who normally aren't accepted to know that this is a safe space for them. I named that monkey Sankofa, and that is after the food forest ran by Duran Chavez in Richmond, Virginia. He's an advocate for black farmers, and he has a food forest there, Sankofa Orchard. And I don't know if you know, but Sankofa's meaning is take back what once was. I think there's a better. It's, here, I'll show you our monkey, though. And it's back here in the shade, so that's good. So, Sankofa is a principle derived from the people of Ghana that one should remember the past to make positive progress in the future. And so I just thought it was fitting. So Sankofa symbolizes that everyone is welcome here and that we can all be part of this to make a better future. We're going on two seasons now, and this monkey is the only thing that has never left the garden. Barack from Flying Pig is a huge guide of ours, and we really admire what they're doing there. They support us unconditionally, and we've partnered up a bit so that people can donate money to this and to what's going on at Flying Pig and support these kind of nonprofits. And Flying Pig is a pig with wings. Mm-hmm. Well, some wings also ended up in the garden. So Sankofa now has wings, just like Flying Pig.
Oh, it sure does.
Yeah. So that's just kind of the symbolism. This was one of the stumps that was to go in one of the berms, but it really resembled this like ancient elephant. And so we kept it too. And we keep a little sweet grass in here just as a, you know, symbolic ceremonial piece for special occasions.
So I would say this is your mascot?
This is our mascot. Well, they kind of both are. So I like that they have each other.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So, Christy, you had talked about growing season. Can you kind of explain your process through growing a little bit? And then also maybe where you see yourself in 5 years on this property?
That is a big question. You know, the hardest part of building community is getting community involved. I think that's been the biggest challenge. And then how do we grow food if, you know, everybody has different ideas? I can't really say that I'm a food grower other than a soil tender or a person that brings other people together. And so I really just try to focus on those two strengths. And then the food growing is just kind of the byproduct of that, hopefully.
You're successful.
And has been. You know, we just picked our biggest harvest yet, which was 107 garlic cloves that we planted in October of last year. So that's exciting. So, you know, we know we can grow food. And so continuing to do things that work is pretty much like duplication.
Education.
Duplication and education has been the biggest piece, and staying open to what other people know, you know, no matter who we are or where we're from, our ancestry goes back to somebody was growing food, you know, so I feel like all of us have so many different things to offer. And then just really paying attention and observing the land and what we're able to do in this forever changing climate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot the second part of your question. Oh, where do I see myself or this in 5 years?
Exactly, both, yeah.
I would hope with no fences. Well, the fences really help us not have to battle deer, but maybe with no locked gate. That would be definitely a goal, and hoping to really spread this type of setting or idea, you know, based on permaculture principles or trying to create food forests that need less human interaction, all over the city. Into those 9 other, you know, already established community gardens. And I know there's even more vacant community gardens.
Right. And I think there was another, it's called Community Garden of the Pikes Peak Region. They have a list where they show several other areas that might not be community gardens, but they are for sure like Flying Pig Farm, an incubator for the community. And actually, no, they do have community plots there too, don't they?
They do.
The Flying Pig.
Mm-hmm. They do. They do. I know that, you know, the same thing is trying to get more community involvement and less individualism.
Right.
And that's kind of the goal I had when I first came into this garden. I had an idea of creating 10 spaces like this in my lifetime. But now that I've joined Pikes Peak Permaculture, that was shooting really low. I feel like 10 is just getting started.
That's a really great goal. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And you'll have to have support along the way.
Oh, my gosh, right? And so really that's, yeah, focusing on my biggest challenge, which is really, you know, what are the fun things that get people out here and want people to come out and to stay. And so that just kind of leads me in, Allie, to like what our goals were for this year. It's hot here. Like, we have zero shade. We're definitely surrounded by beautiful tall trees. Right. But the garden itself is full sun. So that's made it difficult to grow annual food. And to really keep a steady moisture content within our soil. And hence why all these are underground beds, you know, why they did that in the first place. So shade was our biggest goal for this year. First was actually shade for people before shade for beds, because if we can keep the people cool, then we can keep them out here longer. Right. And we needed a central place for communication. So the chalkboard build was a main focus for this year. It was really hard to figure out if this, which is a basic permanent structure, if it was going to be permanent, will it have more than one function? So stacking functions, bringing that permaculture sense back into a build, right? So yes, this is a permanent structure. We did pour concrete so that it would face the winds, the heavy winds that we have. But now it will also have corrugated metal that serves as shade for our garden members. And then to further stack more functions, the corrugated metal roof will disperse water into two rain barrels.
You can collect your rainwater.
Yeah, so that's exciting because also living in drought, you know, it's important to have rain collection.
And be conscious about water usage.
Absolutely. And we have to be conscious about water here. Hence our signs that we put at each water spout. That was us, not the city, because we want to follow water guidelines. I'm going to turn the water off, speaking of. But so this is the hottest part of the garden. These were the driest beds the last two seasons. So that was why we decided to put a new berm here to create more water flow and runoff to the driest beds of the garden, and then be able to house a tree, which is our new apple tree, that sits at the foot of the berm.
Not in the berm.
In the berm, on the east side. Mm-hmm. And so that'll create shade. This is creating water runoff. And then we also planted hops this year, which grows pretty quickly. It made it to officially taller than me, which I'm 5'2". So we built this structure to fence the hops, and then now we will continue the structure to cover two beds, to give two beds shade and more people shade. And that's as far as I can think until next year.
But it'll always be different. It'll change because, again, you're continuing your education. Right. And you know, wow, for someone who did not have any gardening experience, Christy, you're doing a really amazing job here.
Thanks.
Like, you're a natural. And as you said earlier, it's innately in us.
So we definitely have big visions, and it's slow moving, but we're okay with that. We get a lot of people. I get a lot of emails that say, I was driving by your garden and it looks unattended, or it looks abandoned, or it looks like this has gone to seed and needs help. May I come retrieve?
Oh. It's like, well, please come in. Let me show you something different.
Yeah, and it's always fun having that aha moment with people when they realize that this is a very tended garden.
Right.
But that we're just doing things a little different.
We're here in the western part of the garden.
Yep.
And I'm going to just look around and say what I see. I see sunflower, I see catmint, I see lovage, I see borage, I see horseradish over there, I see penstemon. Is that the penstemon? And lots of mint.
Lots of spearmint. Comfrey's the MVP of the...
That's your comfrey. Wow.
Yeah, that has been chopped and dropped twice this season. Mm-hmm. So comfrey helps us. I call it the MVP of the garden because it helps us not to bring in any sort of fertilizer.
That's right. In permaculture, one of our techniques, chop and drop. So I'm glad you brought that up. So you just drop the plant material. They're pulling nutrients up from the soil, and so when you chop that leaf, you're adding that nutrient as a mulch layer, essentially.
We have a whole bed of lettuce right here and kale that has not been taken on by the grasshoppers because right across the way, this is where they are seeming to like things this year, so, which is different than last year. They didn't touch the spearmint last year. But this year they love it here, so they get to love it here. And because they love it here, you won't find grasshopper on the north side of the garden.
Oh, yeah, I do see. I see one in there right now.
Oh, there's probably about 3,000 in there.
Here.
There's a little kale.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
A little munch in the garden.
Little munch in the garden.
Do you have open volunteer days where people can come in and experience what we are experiencing today?
We do. So every last Saturday of the month is an open volunteer day. And pretty much somebody's in here every weekend and people are welcome to drop by and come in whenever. Typically, all of our members are here because you were mentioning, just being mindful of the sun and how hot it can get during peak season. Members are here from 7 a.m. to about 11 a.m. and then not back again until about 5 till park close at 8 p.m. to avoid those hot hours.
Right.
Yeah.
And you don't want to water during those hours.
No, we have strict watering rules here. So water off before 10 a.m. and not back on again until after 5 p.m. Yeah, and not sun torching the babies.
So what advice would you give someone who's dreaming of starting a community garden in their area?
Go visit Flying Pig Farm.
Right. Oh, yes, please. Come, even if you're not, just go.
Come visit us and just do it. Don't have a plan. Just do it. And throw some seeds down. Focus on your soil. Focus on being able to create everything that you need in the space that you're in rather than bringing it in from other places.
Right, and I honestly agree with that and urge anybody too who doesn't necessarily want to start a community garden, but if you own land, especially in the city, grow trees, grow food, cannot eat your lawn. In fact, the state is asking people to now transition. Don't rip your lawn out. There's really wonderful things that you can do to smother it with, with cardboard box and mulch and mulch. And there's, you can get mulch for free on Recreation Way through the city. Have a big chip pile and just go. And even if you don't have a truck, you can load up, some bags or boxes or bins. Every little bit helps. The mulch will break down. And again, that's how you're building your soil. Because out here we have really sandy, alkaline soil.
And then once you get closer to the foothill of the mountain, you have that sandy plus clay, and so really finding that balance. And I have to say, we're fully self-supporting. Our membership cost is way low for the whole season. I think our plot sales is pretty decent. That's pretty much what carries us. We do have a membership or a sponsorship with Carnelian's Coffee right up the street, who we absolutely love. We provide a compost service for them and they give us a good chunk of money for the year. But when I say we're fully self-supporting, this garden runs on less than $500 a year of just member dues and donations. And by saving soil, by composting, by chopping and dropping, by creating fertilizer with nutrient-dense plants such as comfrey, and by doing things like biochar, we don't have to bring in soil, we don't have to bring in fertilizer.
we don't have to bring in seeds. Last year we spent, I think, $250 on seeds. We won't have to buy seeds again. So just really bringing attention to, like, let's utilize what's here and recognize the abundance before we think we need to add to it.
So a little bit of startup cost, but yeah, essentially you're creating a self-sustaining system.
Correct.
All right. Aliens are going to come here one day. They're going to see what you're doing. And when they come here, Christy, what is the first thing you're going to offer them?
Oh, gosh, that's easy. The borage flower. Like, it glows in the dark. You put it in your mouth at any time of the day. It brings in the most beautiful bees and butterflies. Talk about reciprocity.
Oh, yes. Star.
This plant,
the star flower.
This plant is my favorite plant of the garden, while comfrey is the MVP. I would definitely provide them with all of the benefits of comfrey just because we're saving soil here in the West, and that plant definitely helps us do it. That with the gooseberry is like the best combination.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think I'm going to tell that to Gratitude because they can make a mocktail out of that.
Yeah, I've seen people candy these for on cakes.
Yeah.
They're really gorgeous.
Yeah, they go really good with the currants. Yeah. Here, let's get you one with a currant. So you'll see lots of wasps. They're also keeping, they're really keeping the grasshoppers down.
Oh, and a purple bachelor's button.
Isn't that pretty?
Wow, I've never seen that before.
Isn't that beautiful? And we had red poppy on the left earlier this week, which was so cool. I want to grab you a currant to have with this.
So borage flower and currant together. Okay. Oh, and there, look at their little dainty orange currants. I have 5 currants gifts from the birds in my yard.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the more you bring them in, the more they poop and the more...
I know. I'm really excited to see what comes next year just because we've had such an abundance of birds this year.
Christy, that's delightful.
Isn't that so
It's
like that yummy green plus that pop.
Yeah, it's really delicious.
Yeah, so our raspberry bush that I planted in that corner last year has quadrupled. So I'm regretting my placement of the Siberian pea shrub. But, you know, we learn.
That's right, and nature will take care of it.
Nature will take care of it.
Well, thank you, Christy, for letting me come back into the garden.
Oh my gosh, come anytime. Are you kidding? Come every day.
And I hope we can all at some level get involved in this type of work.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, I mean, even if you're not growing your own food, find people that are growing food and support them.
Yeah, absolutely. And most likely, you know, they're breaking bread together. And that's the funnest piece. You know, something I learned from the people who guide us is make sure to harvest what you're growing.
Yes.
Right? Harvest what you're growing, yes. And then that's the piece that you share, and that's what brings community together. And that's what keeps people. I mean, just come get fed.
That's something that we talk about in permaculture, too. There was a teacher of ours that had mentioned that she strives for eating one thing out of her yard every day. Even if that means that it was harvested earlier and frozen, she still pulls that out, and it's kind of a really wonderful feeling to know that you can provide for yourself.
Mm.
And eat your weeds. Yeah. I know you're out here pulling them, but you can eat a lot of them too.
Yes. Yes. This is definitely my currency.
Well, I imagine over there in this chalkboard this fall, would you be willing to have me in for a seed ball class for
yes.
the community?
Oh my gosh, please, yes.
Because that is the perfect time to do it in the fall. That's when you want to throw out your seed balls so they get that cold stratification period. So then
yep.
next spring it'll be a wonderful gift to you all.
Yes, we
all
would
right.
love that. Thank
all right.
you, Allie.
Stay tuned. We're going to have a seed ball class at Vermijo Community Gardens. Is there anything else that you wanted to say?
Just grow. Keep growing. And if you don't want to do it alone, come grow with us.
Thanks for listening to Peak Environment, Peak Alliance for Sustainable Future, Pikes Peak Permaculture, 350 Colorado, and Growth Busters are all environmental sustainability organizations in the Pikes Peak region who collaborate to produce the Peak Environment podcast about environmental stewardship, sustainable living, and enlightened public policy in the Pikes Peak region. Keep up with these organizations, our events, to help continue to make our area a better place to live. And follow Peak Environment on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode.